KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
Good morning. This is Dr. Ann Zink, your host of Line One, Your Health Connection. Today, I am honored to have two guests in studio with us, Joe McMillan and Melinda Johnson, both community health practitioners from the Eastern Aleutians. Healthcare in Alaska is very different, and what it looks like in urban areas versus rural and frontier areas takes on many different forms, and the community health aides are in part and part of the system, working as frontline clinicians in some of the state's most rural communities. Today, we're excited to hear from them, their life, their world, their experiences, and we invite you to join the conversation. You're welcome to give us a call at 907-550-8433 or statewide 1-888-353-5752. And as always, you can email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. And before we get started, I'm just going to have our quick little public health update that we usually have at the beginning of these sessions. And I really wanted to highlight main one thing. Next week is National Public Health Week. This is a very turbulent time for public health across the country. Lots of things are changing in many ways. But the work that happens in healthcare and public health together is what keeps our food and our water clean, to make sure that we have the data and information to understand about diseases, and working together to make thriving, healthy communities, because ultimately, healthy people make up healthy economies. So if you know anyone working in the healthcare and public health sector, next week is their week. Give them a hug. They need it these days, and to celebrate. This is the springtime. Lots of things are happening. We're going to talk a little bit about preparedness, volcanoes, later on in our conversation. And with that, I just want to kind of dive in and be able to introduce our guests. So, Melinda, let's just start with you. Tell us who you are, where you live, and a little bit about your background.
My name is Melinda. I work for Eastern Aleutian Tribes. I live out on Nelson Lagoon. It's on the Aleutian Peninsula. There's about 40 residents there. I'm full-time provider, sole provider. I've been a health aide for a little over 22 years. I have a daughter, one daughter, and I've been married for 23
years. Congratulations. Yeah. Are you from Nelson Lagoon?
I am.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Sounds good. And you've been out there, and what made you interested in becoming a provider?
My mom, Nancy, she became a health aide in 1989. And I grew up watching her do that job. I seen how hard it was. I also seen how happy she was when things went well. And so it kind of made me want to be like her. So after I graduated, I thought about it for a bit. And then we had our daughter. And then the EATS offered me a job at the clinic, and I took it. Because it was meant to be, and the rest is history. So I've been working for Eastern Aleutian Tribes for a little over 22 years now.
That's amazing.
And I enjoy it. Yeah, my mom is the one that made me want to be a community health practitioner. I just seen how much passion she's had with all of her patients, and I wanted to be like her.
Awesome.
Yeah.
What a great. Yeah. Tribute to your mother in so
yes,
many ways.
Yes, no, she's very proud of me and all the work that I've done over the years. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, welcome. We're grateful to have you in the studio.
Thank you.
Joe, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, hello. I'm Joe McMillan. I'm also a community health practitioner. I live in Sand Point. I'm not originally from there. I'm originally from Fairbanks, but I moved out there almost 15 years ago now. And I didn't know anything about the health aid program when I went there. I had started a EMT class kind of out of boredom. We were only planning on being out there a little while. But after doing the EMT class, there was a job. They offered me the job, and I figured, you know, I'm going to be here for a few months. I'll try this out. And, you know, that was over 14 years ago. So, yeah. The job itself, being a community health aide, again, didn't know anything about it, but once I started the training and started doing it, it was just, it was really neat, really fun, intense, a little bit of training, and, you know, a whole lot of responsibility, you know, and it was able to, you know, just keep things being fresh and new all the time, really. Mm-hmm. So it's stayed interesting.
Yeah, I bet. Well, you know, I think that when I moved up to Alaska 16 years ago, I knew nothing about the CHAP program and what it looked like and what it did. So maybe we'll just kind of start by kind of grounding our listeners a little bit in like what the program is and what does it do, you know, and just kind of doing some research. It looks like it was established in the 1960s, really created to address the critical need for accessing healthcare in rural and isolated communities. And really the only way to access, as you all see and live every day, is by boat or plane, snowmobile, almost no machine, making it difficult to access in other ways. And the CHAP program really helps to bridge local residents and healthcare with kind of a tiered system to be able to connect. It looks like the program now consists of about 550 community health aides and practitioners serving over 170 rural villages and really the only healthcare in these regions and communities. Specifically trained to support the structured curriculum, clinical supervision, and ongoing education using treatment guidelines, telehealth technology, and you can consult directly with doctors, nurse practitioners, physician assistants located in larger regions, and collaborative models to just ensure the patients are cared for. So this is, you know, a little bit from my experience, but then a lot from their website. But I want to hear from you all about kind of the beginning of the CHAP program. It's kind of, you've both been in it for a while. We've heard a little bit of how you got into it. But help us to kind of understand the larger system of the CHAP program and how it works within Alaska.
Sure. Yeah, so, I mean, one of the bigger things of the program is the need for healthcare and the, you know, unavailability of all the extra doctors, you know, advanced practice, mid-levels.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a need for medical providers in all these small places, very hard, very expensive to, you know, get people to go to all these places, and it's just unrealistic. So this program takes people from the community and gets them trained through the one of the local hospital centers and sends them back and is able to, you know, learn on the job, learn from other doctors or other advanced practice mid-levels, and gives that community needed healthcare.
Yeah, so like when I first started, I mean, and it's still the same today, I think. It's like you'll go in 4 weeks at a time. You'll do 4 weeks of schooling, training. Like I went to ANTHC is who trained me, and it's intense. I mean, you learn things that other, you know, providers take years to learn. We have to learn them in 4 weeks. And so once they let us, you know, you get back home and you're on the job and you're on call alone, and you know, it's
intense.
Yeah, it's a big responsibility, but the training is amazing. I mean, there's still instructors over there that are still working. I started training with, you know, back in 2001, so yeah.
Talk to us a little bit more about what that training's like. Is it a lot of preventative health work? Is it a lot of emergency stabilization? Is it a combination of both?
It's a combination. Yeah, I mean, we're trained to do well child. We do traumas. We do, you know, chronic care. I mean, all of it. We do a lot.
Yeah, all the health aides are required to have some sort of EMS certification. And that kind of gives you a little background in emergency stabilization, but they try to give you the full gamut, because in some places I'm based in a place that has other providers, so we have help. Where Melinda's at, and I cover there as well, she's the only person.
Yep.
There's no like ambulance that's gonna be coming. There's no other person. There's a doctor on the other line if you can, you know, get them. So if you're all by yourself, no matter kind of what they teach you your scope of practice is, you're going to have to do whatever needs to be done through consultation with a doc on the other end, but you're it.
Yep.
That's it.
That's it.
That's it.
Yeah.
How long is that it for? Tell us a little bit what that looks like.
So I work 6 weeks on, 3 weeks off.
Okay.
And I'm on call 6 weeks alone. In my community.
24/7.
24/7.
Yeah. Always there.
So that's what my life looks like. Joe, on the other hand, he has a different schedule.
Well, I'm a full-time employee, but I also do a lot of traveling. I'm also act as the medical operations manager and the CHAP manager for our program. So I may be traveling to the other sites to do skills checkoffs. I may be going, I cover for Melinda quite a bit. When she has her 3 weeks off, I go and cover that. Come to Anchorage, it's kind of, I do emergency coverage, so I never know where I'm going to be. But traditionally, I'm kind of 5 days on, 2 days off, but probably still be on call.
Yeah. Still on call when you're there.
No. Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And then to help us kind of think through like a case. So, you know, I had the fortune to going out to Nelson Lagoon once. Say I trip and I hit my head and I'm unconscious. Mm. Like, what happens?
Oh, it's load and go, baby.
It's load and go. Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to get you to the clinic. You know, I'll do my assessment, head to toe, call the ER. I don't even worry about doing a write-up. I'm going to call. If it's an emergency, I'm calling. You're knocked out, I'm going to call the ER.
Okay.
We're going to get you on that plane out because I don't have any access to x-rays or MRIs or anything. So I don't know what's going on if you got a hemorrhage in your brain.
Right.
So I'm going to get you out.
And then when you're calling the ER, tell us a little bit about what that conversation's like. Do they have a good sense of
who? Oh, yes. Yeah. So I'm just like, you know, I'm Melinda. I'm a chap from Nelson Lagoon. I need to talk to a doctor on call for health aides. That's all I say. And they know, you know. And I mean, most of the doctors I've talked to been at ANMC for a long time.
So they know the program.
Yeah. Space.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Okay. Now, what's it like to get out of Nelson Lagoon?
So we live on the chain, so it's windy, and it could be foggy, or it could be blizzarding. You never know. Very rare medevacs, you know, are only a few hours out. I mean, the last medevac Joe and I actually had was over 8 hours. So, you know, it just depends. Luckily, the weather was good. So, you know, sitting on a patient for a while, you can definitely know it's going to be more than a couple hours.
Yeah, before you get them out.
Yeah, and we go through, we've got, you know, Guardian Flight and Life Flight that come out.
Are there other people in the community that come and help you out?
So, yeah, my community members are all fabulous. You know, I'm also a BLS instructor. I've done some training, so they know basic life support. Yeah. But when stuff goes south, they're going to help me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I saw this firsthand I don't know, in the last month, 2 months, something like that. Yeah, because it was like 6:30 in the morning. It's an unconscious person, and I couldn't even move them. But made a call, and all these people show up. And, you know, we don't really have an ambulance, but we can, you know, get them where we need to go, you know. So, yeah. Doesn't always happen like that in communities. Yeah. Every community is a little bit different, but she has a lot of good support.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because I think, you know, in a more traditional healthcare system, we talk a lot about how do we get physicians into community? How do we create telehealth so people can be able to be there? But what I've loved about the CHAT program is it kind of turns that on the head and not say how do we get other people there, but how do we train people from the region to know how to support to be able to take care of the health of the population and, you know, sometimes get them out for the head trauma and the pain, you know, not keeping all things there, but that it's instead of like, how do we get other people out? How do we train from within?
Yeah.
You know, with your mom's history and with your history, like what does that mean to a community to have, talk to us a little bit about the difference between having someone like, you know, myself coming into a community that I don't know the same sort of space and providing healthcare versus someone who's from the community being able to be trained and provide care?
I think it's just about knowing the person, you know, knowing them, like the provider. Say, in Nelson Lagoon, you know, they know me well, so they trust me. Mm-hmm. They know Joe well, so they trust Joe. You know, it's the consistency of the same providers that come into the community that is good. Because, you know, we're shy. We don't want to tell everybody our problems. But, you know, when you trust your provider, and then it's easier to do that.
Also, you know, being from there, you already know the nuances of the population and usually the actual patient themselves. So when they come to you, a lot of people don't like to, you know, be that forthcoming. Of course, sure you know this, but we already know, you know, we already know. If you're outside the community, a lot of times you're treating them for something that they don't need because you don't actually know what their problem is. So that the providers from the community, which, you know, small place like Nelson Lagoon, it's your brother, sister, mother, uncle, friend, or husband, you know. So you know the people, and it makes a difference.
There's got to be some strengths and some challenges with that, you know, to be able to, you know, care for someone who you know really closely. I know that, you know, caring for friends and family in the emergency department, it can be hard emotionally. It can be hard to kind of separate those two out and to know that space. What's that like, caring for only people you know? And maybe that's been your whole experience, so it's hard to relate to my experience. I'm often caring for people who I don't know at all, so just curious.
No, it's still hard. You know, I know they're, most of them are my family members, mm-hmm. but I don't know, as a health aide for me, I just get in this zone. I'm in this, I want to save the patient, or I want to make sure they're taken care of, and when they leave, I want to know that they're happy with the care I gave them, so.
That's great. That's, yeah, I mean, that is, there's nothing
but it's hard, you know, to see my family members go through things, you know. I mean, any community, we're all friends and family. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter if you're aunt or uncle or just a friend. It's going to, you know,
affect you differently.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just a reminder for people, you are listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection, and you're welcome to call in at 1-888-353-5752 or from Anchorage 550-8433 or email line1@alaskapublic.org if you have experiences to share or perspective or questions that you want to ask about providing care in some of our most beautiful and far-flung parts of the state. You know, John, I'm curious from your perspective, you go down to a bunch of different regions and you go to different clinics. What's kind of some of the differences between the structure? You know, we've heard from Melinda, or it's like Melinda, her community, her family, but it sounds like that's not the case in all of the different communities. So help us understand kind of the structure in different communities.
Sure. We have a couple larger communities where we actually have certified BLS ambulances. So it's a little bit different when you do have some support. You have, you know, mid-level providers, PAs, nurse practitioners. So you have a lot of extra, you know, support that you don't have other places. So you know, you're not it, you know, and it's, it, you know, it can feel, the stress level can be completely different. You know, as far as mostly equipment and whatnot in all the different places, we have all the same stuff, more or less. Melinda doesn't have an x-ray machine, but we have x-ray and other capabilities that are more or less the same in the rest of the places. Some of the communities, we have Accutane. You know, Accutane, great little community, but, you know, it's just boardwalks. Everybody just walks everywhere, you know. All you can fit is a side-by-side on the boardwalk if you do need to medevac somebody, but at least you have something to, you know, be able to take them to the clinic on. You know, each place is different. Getting to those places, I just was recently in Accutane, what, maybe 2 weeks ago? It's hard to keep up with time these days, but 2 to 3 weeks ago I was there. You have to usually take a plane to Dutch, then a small plane to Coon, and then a helicopter to Accutane. And of course, the helicopter was broken down, so there was a boat. And of course, the boat was, you know, an 18-foot open top, you know, what I'd consider a dinghy. And, you know, did we have life jackets? There may have been one on the boat. I didn't see it, but, you know, and pretty good seas. Going out, it was kind of calm, and it was probably only like 5-7 foot rollers. And then, you know, when we had to come back, it was blowing 30. In the middle of the pass, it was probably 10 to 15 breaking seas, and, you know, probably wouldn't want to do that again, but, you know, it's, you know, it was all in a day's work, so, you know, a little different commute to different places.
Yeah.
Other places, you know, you walk out the clinic door and there's a bear in front of you. I know in Alaska that's nothing new, but Sandpoint doesn't have bears, so, you know, every little thing's different where you go.
Yeah.
We also service ADAC, another 600 miles west of where I live. You know, an old abandoned military base, crazy infrastructure spread out. You know, our clinic's in an old school. We're in the principal's office, and the admin side is where the ER's at. So, you know, everything's different. Everywhere you go, it's a totally different experience.
Yeah. I bet you guys have some amazing stories. And it's interesting, like you mentioned, different things become normal in different regions. Like a bear, I remember when I was in Dutch and they're like, we're going to take you on a man basket between ships. And I was like, I have no idea what a man basket is, but we will learn. And I learned is how you transport people between ships. And that's, you know, how we went and helped to get vaccination out. And so I was like, oh, okay, this is the norm in this region, in this space. You know, that seems like there's also this infrastructure with Eastern Aleutian tribes as a whole that helps to support each community. What's that kind of like infrastructure, kind of leadership support look like, not look like? How much like independence versus kind of, you know, here's the program, you just kind of on your own? Help us understand kind of those, that connection. Either one.
Well, you know, we have great access to our upper management. I manage the CHAP program, but above me we have Dr. Losey, our medical director, which any of us can, you know, call, talk to her at any time for consultations or
like
help.
Anytime. Yeah. Any time of the day. It could be 3 o'clock in the morning. She's available. Yes.
Yeah. And then, you know, our CEO, which is a lot different from most places, because our CEO, again, we can talk to him at any point. And if we need something, it's going to be on the plane the next morning, right?
Yes.
So, like, you know, somebody runs out of medicine, we're sending the CEO to run to the pharmacy to pick up a prescription and take it to a plane and have it sent out, or you know, whatever it is. If you ask Paul for something, I'm pretty sure it'd be on the plane the next day.
Yeah,
it's always interesting in different kind of regions of the state and kind of seeing, you know, and I remember like one time again with going out with the Eastern Aleutians, was like, well, we're bringing all these groceries this time and we're medevacing this patient this way. And like all of the logistics. I mean, it also seems like there's all these logistics that happen, not just on like the emergent head bleed, but on the bringing the patient back after they've been admitted to the hospital. And now they've got to get back to community and like how that fits into shopping. Or we were, you know, joking about other services in Anchorage that people take care of. Tell us about like how those things all fit together.
Yeah, it's hard. A lot of it's flights.
Yes.
I mean, a lot of these places, it's hard to get out. So where Melinda's at, you know, we don't have an x-ray machine. So if you need somebody to get x-rayed, you know, our management gets some plane going.
Yep.
And, you know, you try to get everything in that you can if you're going to town.
Cram it all in.
Well, I wish that our listeners could see the faces of Joe and Melinda here, because hearing their stories and seeing the smiles, I know there's many more stories behind there, but we are going to have to take our first break. So again, you're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection, and look forward to talking to you after the break.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get your weekly look at the trends, policies, and issues that impact your wallet in Alaska with the Alaska Economic Report. From local businesses to fiscal policy to big industries like fishing, tourism, and oil and gas, I'll cover the high-stakes economic issues that matter to Alaskans all over the state. That's the Alaska Economic Report with me, Ava White, on your local public radio station each week.
Thanks for listening today. We love being a part of your media mix. Tune in every day to catch the best in statewide news and programming.
Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Ann Zink, and today we're talking about the Community Health Aid / Health Practitioner or CHAP program, and we are super excited to have in studio with us from the Eastern Aleutian Tribes, both Joe McMillan as well as Melinda Johnson, sharing their perspectives and stories and also answering your questions. So as always, you can give us a call at 1-888-353-5752, or if you're calling from Anchorage, 550-8433. Or email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. We'd love to hear your perspectives, thoughts, or questions about what it's like to work in one of the most remote and beautiful places on this planet. So, You know, we were talking a little bit about kind of that structure and support and the ways that things give out. I love, you know, you talked a little bit about your boating example. Can you guys think about a story or an example, clearly not identifying any patient information, you can mix a couple together, to kind of tell us what like an average day and an average kind of medical experience is like? Like, what's your average? I know there's probably no average day, but like...
No average day, but there's a lot of chronic care.
Okay.
So that's what I do. It just depends. People just kind of, I mean, my clinic is a slower clinic, slower than like the larger ones, you know, because there's only a population of about 40 in Nelson Lagoon. So it just depends on what I see. I mean, it could be anywhere from bronchitis to UTIs. I just never know.
When you talk about chronic care, are you managing people's diabetes? Oh,
diabetes.
High blood pressure?
Yep. High blood pressure, diabetes, cholesterol. Yeah.
Yeah. And then if you say you're managing someone's blood pressure mm-hmm. and their blood pressure has become more challenging and isn't responding to the meds, is that a point you do like a telemedicine visit that you then call Dr. Losey? Like how does that kind of escalation of care happen?
So yeah, in the CHAM, we need to report anything high blood pressure wise. So we have to report to the doctor if it's above, you know,
a certain number.
So it's always reporting for us.
Okay. Yeah. So kind of being able to escalate that chain.
Yeah.
I wanted to go ahead and turn over. It looks like we've got Stu from Eagle River. Stu, you're online when your health connection.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question about quarantine. You know, during the pandemic, they all started talking about the 1918 flu epidemic and how some villages shut things down and did better than others. And then I think, well, we all lived what happened. So, is there any protocol you guys have for quarantine if we do have another pandemic? And another question I had is, since drugs are part of public health, when people do happen by, are the health workers involved in basically seeing if incidental visitors are bringing drugs into the community or not? Just a couple things. This is a very fascinating show. I got my this year.
Great, Stu. We kind of lost you at the end, but I think I got your two questions there. So kind of the first question, infectious diseases. You know, we talked about the 1918 pandemic. Clearly, we've all gone through COVID here recently. Talk to us a little bit about protocols for quarantining, for kind of isolation, work that in protocols that you guys have, be it TB or something like COVID, to be able to reduce the risk of infectious diseases. And then I think the second part of Stu's question was really much more about drugs and coming into communities and what ways the CHAPs are involved, maybe with law enforcement or others, to try to keep drugs coming into communities or the response associated with things like fentanyl. So, yeah, either one. Maybe let's start with the infectious disease component and talk to us about what that looks like.
Well, as far as normal precautions, you know, we still have plenty of PPE. We kind of stockpiled a little bit of that a few years ago. So regular precautions that we have is, you know, just our personal protective equipment. I mean, as far as during, you know, our clinics all kind of went to probably like the rest of the world and just kind of stopped seeing those non-emergent type of things. It's going to be kind of hard to say what happens next time. I mean, each community kind of handled their own quarantining methods differently. Our clinics all kind of went by the same thing as far as seeing emergent things and kind of changing as the pandemic progressed. But as far as the next one, you know, we'll just have to kind of wait and, you know, see what the next ANZ Inc. tells us what we need to be doing.
Yeah, Melinda, curious on your perspective, and then maybe I'll share the state perspective.
I mean, I agree with Joe. You know, you just never know. I mean, when COVID first came out, I mean, we were quarantining for 2 weeks. I mean, you know, my community, you know, we barely let anybody, outsiders, come in because, you know, my population is a lot of elders, and, you know, you got to keep them safe. But now it's kind of... a little bit more laid back, you know. I think most of my community is vaccinated, and they know if they're sick, they're going to stay home.
Yeah, and I think that's huge. Taking care of your underlying health and staying home if they're sick.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, educating them is what helped.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, I do think that education is so key, and I think there is a lot of strength in really being a home rule state, having communities who know their community, and just providing the education. As you mentioned, Joe, people still respond very differently to different threats, and rightfully so. People have different risk factors. Communities are different as a whole. And so really, like, from a state perspective, it was all about trying to figure out what we could do to support a local community on how they wanted to respond and what that looked like. And we saw incredibly different responses in different regions based on resources and time and vulnerability, like, you know what, how many elders were in a community, things along those lines. The public health team still works with people to, you know, say someone's got active TB, to working with that person to try to make sure that person isn't flying, getting on a plane, spreading active TB to other regions. That's much more like localized than I think what people saw on a larger, broader scale with mm-hmm. COVID as a whole. But then also doing things like monitoring RSV. So RSV is a reportable condition in the state. We mm-hmm. kind of keep track of the overall numbers and then put out recommendations for both monoclonal antibodies for kiddos based on how long the season is based on numbers. So, you know, there's this close combination. I'll never forget when Paul called me and said, "You're just from Anchorage. You don't know what my community looks like." And I was like, "You're 100% right. Help me understand what that looks like." And I think that two-way conversation is what makes Alaska wonderful,
yeah.
where we get to learn and hear from each other in so many different ways.
Yeah.
There was a kind of second part of that question as well about drugs kind of coming into communities, opioids, other sorts of things, law enforcement. What do you guys, how involved are you there? What do you want to share there?
I mean, in Nelson Lagoon, we have a VPSO, you know.
Do you want to share what that is?
VPSO is Village Public Safety Officer.
Perfect.
Yeah. And, I mean, the only time I'm involved is if there's an emergency.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Yeah. Joe?
So in Sandpoint, they for quite a while now, they have been getting funding, and I think some of it through Eastern Aleutian Tribes, for a drug interdiction mm-hmm. Police officer. We have regular like city police in Sandpoint, but we actually employ one in Anchorage that helps in interdicting through the airport or whatever else, coming out to multiple communities, not just Sandpoint, but kind of through the Aleutians. And they've got quite a lot of drugs over the last couple of years.
Yeah, you know, and I would even just highlight, since you brought up the Sandpoint example, that was an example that I learned from about where a community said, we really want to intervene and not have drugs come into our community, and we're willing to kind of put resources and work to be able to do that, and had significant decrease in opioids coming into community. And so when COVID was kind of accelerating, we actually thought a lot back to the Sandpoint example and said, how can we use that same lesson learned to try to reduce COVID before it comes and kind of buckshots into community? And that's where you saw a lot of the airport testing and other things, was to identify in these areas, instead of our geography being our disadvantage, how can we use our geography to our advantage, where people kind of come through smaller windows like an airport and being able to help people to be informed if they might be carrying a deadly virus and know about that before. But we honestly said, like, this is just replicating what Sandpoint did with drugs. So I think it's been really fascinating to learn. Speaking of drugs and alcohol, Todd from Anchorage, welcome to Line 1, Your Health Connection.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate this segment here. I'm wondering about your experiences with dealing, not on a legal basis, but more of a healthcare basis, with drugs and alcohol in remote villages. And I'm especially thinking of something like being locked down from a pandemic, and drugs and alcohol dry up and people go into withdrawal, especially from alcohol. And how do you guys, do you see this? Do you manage it? What's your backup? So I'll let you go. Thank you.
Thanks for your question, Todd.
Yeah, drugs and alcohol is kind of big all through rural Alaska, unfortunately. So whether it's in a pandemic and drying up, or just chronic alcoholism and you're running out of money, we go through phases of having to deal with withdrawal. We have medicines for that severe withdrawal. Of course, we have to refer off and send them into town, but it's kind of something that we deal with. We're in large fishing areas, so we'll see a lot of opioid withdrawal at the beginning of fishing seasons when people come up for fishing jobs. And it's just, it's expected. It's something that we just, you know, we learn to deal with. Eastern Aleutian Tribes has a pretty good MAT program, the medically assisted treatment for opioids, and that's been doing pretty good. Yeah, it's something that we have to deal with. I don't know how much Melinda has to deal with it. I know the larger sites do see it quite often.
Yeah, so alcohol withdrawal, you know, it's a big thing. And like, I mean, for probably every community. So that's what I deal with. But like Joe said, I manage with consulting, of course, and then medicine. You know, just got to keep our patients comfortable.
Yeah, no, I love just kind of the tone of, you know, we have to just serve our patients in different ways. And we all have struggles and challenges. Yeah. And, you know, alcohol and drugs are a part of every community in different ways and finding ways. You know, I just want to pause on what you were saying, Joe, about MAT treatment. Those who may not be involved in the addiction space may not appreciate what a remarkable feat it is to be able to offer medication-assisted treatment in the Eastern Aleutian Tribe region. There was a lot of federal barriers to providing medication-assisted treatment. The data is very clear that just like insulin's very effective at treating diabetes, medication-assisted treatment is very effective at treating opioid use disorder. It's had a lot of stigma associated with it. It had a lot of barriers to provide it. And not a lot of people trained in it. And so it's been really exciting to see communities, community health aids, associations like Eastern Aleutian Tribes being able to figure out what that looks like and how to provide state-of-the-art treatment and care no matter where someone lives in this state. And so I just wanted to kind of pause and highlight that because I think it's remarkable.
It is.
And we need more ability to address addiction as a disease. And it's just, it's pretty impressive regardless of when someone lives. So I just wanted to congratulate you all on that work. Speaking of congratulations, we have an email here from Nikki, and she just said, greetings, Medevac pilot here, and wanted to give a shout out to all the folks in villages in rural Alaska that help to stabilize patients and get them ready for your flights. Your help is invaluable and always appreciated. Not all heroes wear capes. Random medevac pilot. So I don't know if that who the person is. That's just what we got on that space. But that is huge. And yeah, tell us a little bit about that relationship with the pilots and the medevac team. It seems like almost an extension of the work that you do some days. But what's that relationship like?
So I've seen, you know, flight crews multiple times. I mean, they know, you know, face to face. So it's good when you do, when you know them. I mean, you know, it makes handing the patient off easier. You know, I think it's great. Yeah.
Joe, how about you?
Yeah. I mean, so they're the one people you want to see in really, really bad situation, especially when you're all by yourself. I mean, you're just hoping that you can hold everything together until that plane gets here, you know, because they've got all the good medicines, yes. They've got the extra training, the extra hands, all the equipment that's needed. So once they get there, that stress level just kind of drops,
yes.
And you know the outcome is likely going to be better. I mean, you know, she says she's seen them, same crew multiple times. I've seen the same crew like three times in a 24-hour time period in the bigger places, you know. And yeah, it's a great thing to be able to have them. It'd be great to have more planes around the Aleutians. Most of the flights are stationed, you know, Kenai or Anchorage. LifeMed has a flight out in a plane that's stationed out in Dutch. So that's kind of nice. Every once in a while we can use that, mm-hmm. you know, and it saves a lot of time.
Yes.
Are you guys oftentimes waiting for a plane for a long time?
Yeah, I think the last one, our last medevac we actually did together, it was over 8 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a long time.
Yeah.
It
was a rough one.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, I mean, when you're transferring someone out, you're transferring because you don't have the capacity or the capability, like you said, a CT machine, a neurosurgeon, a ICU to be able to care for that patient. And so you're really practicing above your capacity for a long time.
Yeah, for a very long
for
time.
For a very long time. Yeah. And that can be really, really hard.
I can't even tell you how many times I've cried after the plane left. You know, I'm just like so happy.
Yeah, it's got to be a huge emotional burden. You know, you're caring for friends and family. You're caring for loved ones. You're putting your heart and soul into it in that space. I mean, how do you process that? How do you manage that?
I have a good support system, you know, my husband, my daughter, my sister, my mom, my family supports me, and that's what gets me through a lot of this stuff.
Yeah,
yeah, is support. Yeah, mm-hmm. And I love what I do, so, you know, when my patient makes it out and they come back home, I mean, that's like a blessing to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all you can hope for your patient, right? Like
every day.
Yeah, that they do well and come home and yeah. able to be able to thrive.
Yeah, that's what I want, is them. Thank you for that, thriving.
Yeah, yeah, mentally, physically, all.
It's not about the quantity. I want the quality for my patient. You know, the quality of life is important, not the how many days we're going to be alive, but how many days they're going to feel good with the care that I give them.
Yeah. And be able to go on to making another chapter, another memory or something in that space. Yeah, there's nothing more rewarding than being able to care for someone who's in a hard place and come back and see them later. And that's got to be really rewarding to be in community that way, in a different perspective. You know, Joe, from your perspective, kind of going around to different ones, do you find a variety of people have different support systems and mechanisms? I mean, I'm sure we're all human, we're all different, but like, what do you see in that space?
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, I mean, some people... It's very hard on them. It's very hard on some of the, you know, chaps, the providers that deal with this day in and day out. And especially, you know, if you have quite a few deaths or just bad outcomes for a while. And, you know, these are all related to them, or they went to school with them or something like that. And, you know, some people it's very hard for, very hard. As long as I can get out on my boat far enough out of cell
that's
phone range.
Right? Yep,
that's how I deal with
yes.
it.
Yes.
That brings me great joy.
Yeah.
But everybody's different. Of course, you know, some people try to deal with it with alcohol or anything else, like, you know, the rest of us. But it's hard. It's a hard space, especially in the long run. People have to find something constructive to be able to deal with the stressors.
Yeah, no, incredibly stressful. We are up on our next break, so just reminding you all, you are listening to Line One, Your Health Connection. You are welcome to join us after the break. You can call in at 1-888-353-5752, or if you're calling from Anchorage, 550-8433. Or email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. And we'll return to talk about community health aides here shortly. Thank you.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Start your day with a quick look at the most important stories from around the state with Alaska Morning News, your dose of headlines each weekday morning. With reporters covering every corner of Alaska, you can be sure you're up to date on the stories that matter to Alaskans. Join me, Ava White, for Alaska Morning News weekdays on your local public radio station.
Local sponsors do right by their business and for the community by supporting public media stations. Thank you for considering adding your corporate support. You'll be in good company.
And welcome back. This is Dr. Ann Zink, your host this week for Line One, Your Health Connection. I am so honored to have two community health practitioners, Joe McMillan and Melinda Johnson from the Eastern Aleutian Tribes, here with me in studio to talk about their world, their practice, and the future of the CHAPS program. But before we talk about that, we have another caller, Nate from Anchorage. You're on Line One, Your Health Connection.
Hello, this is Nate Lucas. I'm a dentist, and I've had the good fortune to work with both Melinda and Joe.
You should see their smiles right now.
They've been so kind to me over the years, and I sure appreciate it. And I know I'm a terrible disruption to their schedules when I come out there.
We appreciate you, Dr. Lucas.
For sure.
Oh, well, I hope you guys are having a good day. And kind of a sideline, small world thing, Joe. I think my daughter Hannah was on that boat from Accutane the other day.
She was, and at least she brought some wet gear. She was able to share it with the rest of the people that weren't quite prepared to have a swim.
She said it was a thrilling trip.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, well, thanks for all the good work you guys do. It was so fun to hear your voices on the phone, on the radio when I was driving to town today.
Thank you, Dr. Lucas.
All right.
Thanks so much,
Chief. See you soon.
See you when you come out, Dr. Lucas.
Okay. Have a good day, you guys. Bye-bye.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. So, you know, here's Dr. Lucas, Nate, like just driving through town, hearing you guys on the radio, kind of surprised. But tell us about what that relationship like for dental care or for mental health care or for other subspecialty care, people coming in and out. How does that work? How is that coordinated? Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, we have a good relationship with, like, SCF, South Central Foundation. We get dental from, you know, they come out, like, once a year. We try to get them out every 6 months, you know. And I feel like it runs, I mean, it's smooth. The connecting with us, you know, me and the front desk, we, you know, get all the patients in, we get them ready, so when they're in Nelson Lagoon, all they need to do is call the patients in and they come in. So, I mean, the system now is like, we've got it down. Yeah.
It's awesome.
Dealing with weather, you know, I mean.
It is what it is.
It is what it is.
Yeah. Joe, any other thoughts there?
Yeah, well, you know, the dental team's coming out, and in Sandpoint, we will see them a little bit more often, but, you know, we kind of try to get them around the sites as the need arises, and there's always need for dental. We almost never can fill the need, but it's almost like the medevacs, you know, how happy you are to see them, because we will just get so many people in with dental issues, mm-hmm. and there's really nothing we can do. We can give you, you know, some antibiotics if there's an abscess, but other than that, you know, it's, you know, there's not much we do. So when the dentist team comes out, it's just a godsend, because, you know, it can take a lot of time in your day, you know, to deal with dental issues that you can't really do anything with, or after hours mm-hmm. calls and disturbances for, you know, again, you don't really have anything you can do for them. Mm-hmm. So it's great to have them.
It is.
And especially, you know, Dr. Lucas has been coming around for a good while. So it's nice to see, you know, people that know the region and know the people as well.
Yeah, I think a couple of his assistants found some glass balls in Nelson Lagoon. Yeah. Yeah.
They got some real prizes.
Yeah, they did.
Out there.
Yeah.
Those are the ultimate.
Oh, yeah, I got to show them our gem, you know.
Oh, yeah. My daughter still talks about the glass balls of Nelson Lagoon. So, yeah, that's fun. Besides dentists, what other specialists, especially, you know, practitioners come out to different regions in the Eastern Aleutians?
Eye doctor that comes out.
Yeah, optometry comes out.
Joe, he's our retinal imaging guy. Yeah, he'll travel. He travels around to all of our clinics and does retinal imaging for our diabetics.
Oh, great.
Yeah,
that's great. Yeah, a nice 120-pound box to, you know, carry around. But, yeah, so I usually only try to do that about once a year to get into diabetics that we need to have imaged. Optometry comes out. Every once in a while, we can get some physical therapy out. That's a little bit harder to get out. Trying to think.
Those what are the main else? Ones.
We have
our village docs.
Yeah.
Our village docs would come in.
Yeah, each community has an assigned
referral doctor,
and they'll come out and spend a few days to a week seeing patients.
Yeah.
And kind of augmenting the health aid experience, or with the nurse practitioners and PAs as well.
Interesting. Okay. How has technology or telehealth changed? I mean, you've been doing this, you know, for 22 years. Like, how has that changed your experience? Where do you see things going with the changes in technologies and interconnectivity?
Better.
Being able to better. Someone was like better. Just
I
better.
Love Tiger Connect. Okay. when I'm talking to the ER doctor, Tiger Connect is my friend.
Yeah.
Because I could send them pictures of the EKGs or the vitals just right away. You know, it's amazing technology. I absolutely love it. We got our VTCs. We do, you know, with the specialty clinic, say for internal medicine, they'll call the clinic, the patient is there, we go over them, you know, have a regular appointment.
So just for people who aren't familiar, Tiger Connect, can you tell us a little bit about that? And VTE, can you tell them a little bit what that is?
So Tiger Connect is on the phone, of course, and you could connect with the ER docs, ANMC, Providence, if you need to, for any emergencies, after hour calls.
Yeah, it's just it's encrypted, no, you know, loss of patient information. But yeah, we can be, it's instantaneous, you know, in the past before that, especially if we needed to talk to like the on-call orthopedist mm-hmm. or someone like that, that, you know, that's, we're sitting around waiting for a long time. With this, I mean, they're usually answering us within a couple minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it really just, it helps, especially in your place, you know, like Nelson Lagoon, where you're all by yourself. It's very frustrating and stressful to have to wait for half an hour, an hour to, you know, try to figure out what to do with somebody. So it's really helped a lot. Our regular telehealth as well, like she was talking about, the regular video visits, that's really changed in the last few years.
Yeah.
Because, you know, travel is our biggest thing in the region, trying to get people in to see who they need to see. And all of our clinics have our little carts we can put into any room and connect them with whichever, you know, whether it's cardiology, orthopedics,
internal med,
yeah, whichever place. A lot of PT, that was a thing that was always missing out in rural area outside the Anchorage Bowl, was PT. But now we can do a lot of that PT just over video.
Yeah.
And so that makes a huge difference.
That's really cool.
It's making our lives a lot easier.
Yeah.
You know, because us chaps are the backbones to our communities.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of responsibility. And with all this new technology, it's just like, music to my ears.
Well, with that kind of looking forward, you know, you've seen some of these new technologies and things coming in. You know, if you were king and queen for a day, if you had all the resources in the world, like, what would you do to improve the health in the communities that you serve? What would that look like?
I mean, honestly, it's been improving over the last few years. So
that's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if resources were unlimited, there'd probably be two things that I would love to see. One would be assisted living, rehab facilities. Mm-hmm. Because that's huge where we're at, mm-hmm. and more of like a moderate complex lab.
Mm.
So we didn't have to send off a lot of things that may time out due to weather or planes or whatnot. So being able to get any of the labs that we need and being able to care for our aging population a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had to do, you know, basic end of life care, that sort mm-hmm. of stuff. That can be very draining on someone, especially depending on the amount of time that you're doing it. You know, it's mentally and physically very difficult. So things like that, if we had a facility for that, and just to help out our elders that are really can't live alone anymore and mm-hmm. have to get moved out of the community, you know, to somewhere they've never been or mm-hmm. know anybody, it's just kind of, that's hard.
Yeah, no, I think you bring up two really kind of distinct but important points in thinking about healthcare as a whole and healthcare in Alaska. You know, the ability to have near real-time access to diagnostic information. I think people forget on how much time's out. I mean, this came up all the time during COVID. It comes up on, you know, colorectal screening, you know, all sorts of things where there's time out on these labs. And so hopefully having increasing technology so that you can do point of care, you can have more resources there to be able to identify things. I think those of us in more urban areas and myself working in an ED, like that's 24/7 that has a lab right there, we forget kind of those delays in time. And then Alaska has an aging population as well. And how do we care for our elders in community, in region, and, mm-hmm. and what does that look like, I think is a huge challenge that so many are thinking about. We also, the email threads today seem to be just a bunch of emails about much love and appreciation for the work that you guys do. So another email, heartfelt thank you from our friends at the Rural Anchorage Service Unit Village Pharmacy here on the ANMC campus to the rural health aides that care for Alaskan communities. Happy to serve as we strive to keep our communities safe and healthy. So great to hear another shout out. You know, it's just like this network. It's this web of different providers being in community for generations to working with the pharmacists in the space. Tell us about kind of how this works with pharmacy and meds and what you have there and how you get things in and don't get things in from what you need.
So, yeah, like Nelson Lagoon, I mean, we get a plane in. That's how we get all of our stuff in. I've known a lot of the people over at the pharmacy for a very long time, so I have a good relationship with them. And they know the program. I love working with the pharmacy. They're great.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've Most of them have all been there before I've started working there. And so it's definitely familiar people. But, yeah, you know, a lot of people don't realize we don't have pharmacists on site. We have basically a very expensive, you know, Coke machine that has, medications in it. And we still order things like there was a pharmacist on site, but they go to the pharmacist there. In Anchorage, they approve things, and then they're able to send things back to where then we can drop them out of the machine. So it has the pharmacist oversight still without them being there.
No, that's awesome. Yeah.
But it also limits, you know, what we can actually have. We can only keep so much stuff. Sandpoint, bigger place, we have a little bit more things. Nelson Lagoon. You know, they have most of the stuff. I mean, gosh, if we needed more things, there's not room to put more things.
No,
anyway.
No. So,
I mean,
we got
very
most
small
of it.
Area, but it works. It works. You know, once you get used to it, it seems great. I mean, the pharmacists are there to help you 24/7.
They're amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, there's this kind of almost simplicity, you know, in hearing you all speak, and also from my experience being in community of where you have someone who knows you, who cares about you and your community, and not having to drive to the pharmacy and wait for the dispensing, but to be able to just get the meds you need and to be able to consult the people. I oftentimes say that, like, there's so much to learn in rural Alaska about the ways that healthcare could be delivered in really ways that serve the whole patient and the whole community that I think the rest of the healthcare system and the rest of the country can learn from. I think sometimes we think about knowledge transfer being the other direction, and why I was really excited to have you guys on, because I think we have so much to learn from your experiences and that whole person care that I hope that we can figure out ways to build into care no matter where someone's at, even if they're in Anchorage or Wasilla, where it's become more, you know, fragmented in different ways. You know, we only have a few minutes left, but I want to kind of give you both a chance to just share, like, what do you think people need to know? This might be legislators, this might be the clinicians you're calling, this might be the random person you ran into Anchorage. What do you think are some of the biggest misconceptions about the CHAP program or about where you live and work, and that you want to make sure that you share? They're both deep in thought at the moment for those who are not here.
Well, one thing that I want to throw out there, at least, especially the younger generation, I'd like one of the, you know, it seems to be almost a taboo for some of the younger people to want to work at the clinics and become the community health aides. And, you know, I'd really like them to know that it's a great opportunity. It's very fulfilling. It can be long hours. It can be stressful, but it is a very fulfilling job that, you know, has great potential for good earnings and, you know, a good life. Mm-hmm. So I just want to throw that out there to, you know, apply if you're interested in, you know, helping out the community. Yeah. It's good.
I love it.
I agree. I love my job.
Your smile tells me you're not telling a lie there. No. She's honest here.
Well, my mom was a big part of it. You know, she showed me how much she loved it, and I just wanted to follow her.
That's awesome.
Footsteps.
What inspiration for future generations and for the rest of the state of Alaska. This has been Dr. Ann Zink. You've joined us on Line One, Your Health Connection. And here we've been able to have both Melinda Johnson and Joe McMillan be able to share their experience in the Eastern Aleutian Tribes working as community health practitioners. Thanks for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you soon. Oh, I also cannot forget, and I so appreciate our amazing support here in the team. We've got Rachel Cassandra, our producer, and not least and most valuable person who keeps it all running, Chris Hyde, keeping us all on track today. So thank you so much to both of you all.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants, and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.
Aleutian Peninsula Broadcasting is generously supported by the City of Sandpoint. Sandpoint is a first-class city in the Aleutians East Borough, located on Humboldt Harbor on the northwestern Popoff Island. Anchorage is 575 nautical miles to the northeast. The Sandpoint City Council meets the second Tuesday of every month at 7 p.m. in the City Hall Council Chambers. Contact the City of Sandpoint by calling 907-383-2696, emailing sptcity@arctic.net, or visiting their website at sandpointak.com. KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint. K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove. KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay. KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass.